Hi, Gomati. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you, Richie?
I'm doing fine. I think it's just you and me on so far.
All right. And Jenna and Michelle won't be able to join. So it's just me from DNVGL. So the background information was the reply via email, right? There wasn't more.
Correct. It was just a paragraph or so of intel.
Okay. So I did go on their website and it, since we have just the hour, and in the past, focusing on one has taken like quite a bit of time, like what would you, based on what we've heard from others so far, do you have any preference on like what we ask, or let it be organic and pose the questions, and then whatever they choose to share on each of these topics we take and go as far as we go, like
let's see which one they prioritize, and then I think if we lay it out at the beginning of the call that I think we should try to spend 30 minutes on each, and maybe we just focus on biggest challenges, top level strategy, and what would you what have you learned that you would tell other utilities. I think like those are the three that we've gotten the best answers on. How are you defining success? I feel like that's, they kind of get into that. So I don't know, maybe we just maybe modify or prioritize our questions and let's see if we can't get through both. But let's play it, let's see how they prioritize.
Sure. And I'll say, please feel free to jump in because you have been a constant through all of these calls and you know how the larger story is shaping up. So jump in at any time. You need, yeah.
We'll do. I will tell you, I am, hi, did someone just join?
Yeah, this is Larry.
Hi, Larry. How are you doing today?
Good. Is this Richie?
This is Richie.
Great.
Good afternoon to you as well. And Larry, I believe it's just going to be you from PG&E, or PGE, correct?
Yes.
Good afternoon, Larry. This is Gomati from DNVGL, and I'll be joining Richie on our conversation this afternoon. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you.
Well, great. Well, then we got everybody. There's just a – well, maybe not. did someone just join?
Steve Rich.
Hi, Steve. You got Larry and Gomati are on the line.
Hi. Greetings. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Good. I've seen you at a distance a few times in the last 2 or 3 weeks, but haven't gotten a chance to talk, so I apologize for that.
No, good to get on the phone at least. And hopefully we do. We'll have to check notes to say what's coming up in the future where we can actually connect up.
Yeah, no, that'd be great. You may already know this, but my mom lives in Canby, and I need an excuse to come up there anyway. So give me a good excuse, and I'll come up to Portland and see you.
All right. Well, we need to think about that. Well, good. I got to bring up my notes here. You had a number of questions. It seemed like you wanted to dive into maybe what we're doing transportation electrification or I'll call it distributed energy resource, but and demand response, and then maybe grid infrastructure upgrades and where we're going.
Well, and yeah, Larry, and just to kind of put some context around that, and really just before we get started, I just to let you know that I set a recording for the call, and it's just so you have Gomati and myself and Steve on, but there's a few others that are supporting the writing of this. So we're recording it just so we capture it correctly, but not sharing it outside of this group. So I just want to make sure you're aware of that.
Okay.
That's okay?
Sure.
I'll try to be
on the phone call.
If we can pull out some really good quotes that we can get into the GMI this year, then, I'd say don't hold anything back. And I think we've gotten some very candid responses here in some of these questions. And this should be, we're looking forward to this. So just to put a little context around what we're doing here, The grid modernization index in the past has been very data driven, and this year we are looking to enhance our ability to tell the stories and to provide insights and amplify the messages of grid operators and different stakeholders that are really experiencing these changes. So the grid modernization index has always kind of done at least given a snapshot in time of where our states kind of ranked in grid improvements, but it hasn't always told the whole picture. And so we think, you know, who better to tell it than the groups that are actually implementing and putting these projects on the grid. And so that's what's led us to reaching out to all of our utilities, members and non-members, different regions. And we've had almost a dozen of these interviews, and we've learned a lot. And so, you know, today we want to kind of keep it organic. Yes, we sent you about 6 or 7 questions here, and we don't need to answer each one of them for all 3 trends because I don't think we'll have time. But, you know, we want to prioritize, you know, what is resiliency looking like in Portland, or you might even have a broader perspective of the Northwest. You know, we've got stories of what it looks like in Florida, in maybe the Mid-Atlantic or in the South. You know, what are your challenges and what are your solutions and what do you find in? And then, you know, same thing with the EV charging. We're hearing that, you know, that's a trend that's being pushed from many different kind of angles, whether it's the market or consumers or from the executive branch, you know, wanting more EVs and that adoption sped up. You know, how are you reacting to that, or how are you guys leading? You know, that those are the kind of messages we're looking to tell here. So, you know, I'll let you kind of start where you think, you know, you guys are most interested in, or, you know, where you have some of the most compelling stories that you want to talk about. But okay. I do want to hand this over to Gomathi. Gomathi has been really leading us through a lot of these questions, but, you know, this can be very organic and kind of get right through it there.
Yeah, thanks, Richie. I think, yeah, we'll cede the floor to you, Larry. You know, not focusing on anything in particular, whatever is compelling, let's start there, what the strategy has been.
Let's move into why a little bit of the Northwest might be different. As we are I'll call it decarbonization. We're decarbonizing our energy supply. So when we talk about our generation, and you think about the number of coal plants that are being shut down in the next, between now and 2030, and some of them are being accelerated. But last count that I had, I believe we had about 3,600 megawatts of coal that's coming off the system in the Northwest, and we had about 1,400 megawatts of renewables coming on. That in itself tells you that there's a number that's missing there. And so I'll call it resource adequacy for the region has become a real concern. And so when you talk about resiliency and how do we operate, and know that to date what we have is an energy imbalance market in the Northwest. CalISO, that is the independent system operator for California, it actually operates the energy imbalance market for basically all of the West, which is that 5 and 15 minute market. But it is not an ISO, it's not an RTO. And so we're considering now a day ahead market, which would be the next step in that equation. We're also putting together we've merged now the two planning organizations, regional planning organizations, and brought them together into one house. And that will be going underneath the Northwest Power Pool, which is a really a great step forward. We had two different entities, and so some of us kind of get caught in the crossfire, and nobody's really planning in between, as you can imagine, with seams issues. And so that's a really nice move for the Northwest. But in addition, it boils down to this regional resource adequacy. And when you're in a PJM or you're in the ERCOT and they're doing their regional adequacy studies and thinking about the future, we held a symposium first part of October where we brought in legislators, all the regulators, utility personnel that are key terms of, you know, we see a shortage coming our way, and how are we dealing with it, and how is it best that we move forward? And so we're pushing to create that resource adequacy standard for the Northwest so that we as utilities participating in that hold ourselves accountable to say, you know, and it's very hard when utilities are doing their own IRPs. And simply if you're short, just, you know, the statement is then, well, just go to the market. There's plenty in the market. Just go to the market. And if you were to talk to folks like PowerX, what you find out is that there is no more. And we're hitting the boundaries, and we've had a number of occurrences where Bonneville, this is March 1st, Bonneville had to call all of its customers in the Northwest and basically say, can you curtail? Because we had a gas shortage at the time. We had low hydro because the snow hadn't started to melt yet. It was a cold spell. There were generators, thermal generators down, and also the DC line to California was down. And when you put all those together, you got a shortage on your hands. And so it's things of that nature that, you know, as we think about the Northwest, we think about resiliency, we're trying to push very hard towards renewables, but there's this gap that exists. And if I were to say, and I heard the CEO of AEG describe that, hey, we're all in, we're doing renewables as fast as we can, and we're backing it all up with gas. Well, we're doing renewables as fast as we can, but we don't get to back it all up with gas. So,
right.
So I hope that gives you a little bit of context to say what we have to do now in the distribution space, you know, is directly driven also by what's going on in the generation space. And so I equate it to breakfast every morning. Who's more dedicated, the chicken or the pig?
All right.
So we're definitely committed in this, and we've got to solve these issues. So I'll stop there. That's kind of the regional adequacy and give you that picture.
Hey, Larry, let me ask you a quick clarifying question, which is with when you look at resource adequacy over the next, I don't know if you're going out as far as 20 years, I assume you probably are, how much of that is driven by load growth from electric vehicles and how much of it is more driven by, you know, retiring old plants and particular coal plants, coal and gas plants?
To date, the studies that have really been done have been driven by reduction of coal and bringing in renewables. The transportation electrification has been very limited. We just released our transportation electrification plan to the Oregon Commission. And I will say we're pretty conservative as to what we're seeing. And I know there's been some research out there, and I look at how even some of the petroleum companies are now forecasting versus what it was 3 years ago. They're accelerating, you know, something. They're accelerating their forecast for electric transportation, something on the order of 3 to 4 times what they thought it was going to be 3 years ago.
Yeah,
faster growth.
Okay.
So
that could change. Right now, it's not a big impact in your forecast, but it sounds like it could change that.
I think it's going to change very quickly, and so that's. And I don't know if we want to transition to transportation electrification, but I think this is an area where, and yes, our state Governor Brown, she is going to be the chair for the Western Governors Association, and her theme is going to be on transportation electrification. And the Western Governors Association, I think it starts at the Mississippi River and goes west. So it's bigger than just the West Coast.
Right.
Yeah. So I anticipate, you know, there's, 40 models of electric cars coming out. As it stretches closer to 300 to 400 miles, even 500 miles, on a car charge, I think it will advance much quicker. But I think the other place for utilities is trucks, as in local distributing trucks, these smaller semis that run around town and deliver their chargers. And we're working with Daimler's in our backyard. They're building electric trucks, you know, to ship to California right now. They have buses as well. And the Swan Island here, they're that's where they're going to build it. And I'll just say that we're doing some testing with large-scale chargers that are a megawatt to a megawatt and a half. And now you start to think about an electric distribution system. You say, well, how do you do that?
Yeah.
Where do you put that? Overload the distribution system. And also with all the cars coming on, how do you do that? And try to use the capacity that you have in the system already and not have to build out additional capacity. And so a couple of thoughts there. Okay? One is you need buffers, and we call a battery a buffer. So you put in a larger battery at that charging area, and you can slowly charge it while it's discharging to trucks. And you can imagine these warehouses, they got 40 trucks lined up, and they might want 5 chargers. That could be, 8 megawatts of load that you just dumped into a warehouse today that has lights in the building, and that's about it.
Yeah, that's right. It's like putting data centers in everywhere.
Exactly.
Hey, I don't know if you've seen, but the Lyft is starting to deploy electric vehicle Kias here in Denver. They're putting 200 in here, and it's a Kia model that's not even sold here in the U.S. So Lyft is going to lease them to their drivers, and I haven't seen anything about how they're going to charge, whether the drivers have to, figure out the charging themselves or what, but that's 200 new vehicles going in over the next, 3 or 4 months here, which is not huge, but you just think of that as the tip of the iceberg.
Sure, Amazon, they announced theirs, and I drive by their parking lot over here, in the Port of Portland area. They got a big parking lot of a couple hundred of those delivery vans. There's a street light there. That's it.
Yeah.
So you're right. We, as fleets, how do we start to tackle this? Because every cities that, again, want to go 100% clean, and the city of Portland here is asking, the Multnomah County, Salem, Milwaukee, Hillsboro. They feel like fleets are an area that they can move quickly. And so they're asking very hard on that particular question.
Larry, I had a couple of follow-up, just in preparation for this call, looking through some of Portland General's efforts. First of all, these confluent trends where you have, reducing this resource adequacy problem, which is mainly driven by shutting down coal plants, and then market trends, which are, I just read something about falling prices of batteries, like significant compared to 2010, and customer receptivity to EVs, and in particular Portland General's effort. You talked about electrification of fleets, and I see that Portland General has this sort of education and handholding for businesses that would want to electrify their fleet. Can you say a little bit more about that and what sort of results that's yielded for Portland in general, the classes and the outreach?
So a classic example is our work with TriMet that has the mass bus transit here in the Portland area. And they now have three more buses coming, but they're going to electrify their fleet. And so working with them and as you say, the education on charging, where do you put charging stations? How do you maintain? How do you think about the use of? And so there's been a lot of effort with TriMet. Fleets, we're just starting that, and that's why I mentioned each of these cities. We're beginning to work with cities who want to explore their fleet options and how best, and we're doing our own at the same time. I guess physician heal thyself here.
Right.
To fix our own. So we're working with cities on that behalf, and we've been working with like Cisco and a few others that do the trucking and starting to talk with them. The other education is for dealers, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
How does a car salesman sell an electric vehicle?
Mm-hmm.
And oh, by the way, there's a charging station that they might want along with that. And so it's trying to, invest in that education for those pieces that go around selling that vehicle. If I had a concern in a place that we're starting to work is, do we have a workforce that can handle this? Not just Portland General Electric. We're trying to work through the make-ready work to put chargers in. And as you can imagine, there's a dilemma that resides between National Electric Safety Code, which has traditionally been on our side of the utility side of the meter, and then the National Electric Code was within the building or the customer side of the meter.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a charging station is a meter. So where does which code stop and start? And which workforce is able to work on that? So we're working at state. We want electricians and journeyman linemen to be qualified to work on the equipment. And so we're working with the unions, IBEW, to think hard about that.
That's really interesting. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, please go on. I'll come back to it.
Well, the other one I was going to throw in there, since we're talking about fleets and that education piece, is schools. So how do we begin to work with schools on school buses? And school buses are a place where I think we really need to be focused, because you know when the bus is running, you know when it's sitting. There's lots of school buses sitting around idle. If you can get vehicle to grid, that becomes a huge battery that could be used. And it's also a resiliency item when it comes to the typical emergency situation, and people like the Red Cross are setting up at schools and using the schools, those emergency zones, and now you got generators that are at those schools as well. So that's, use of a vehicle in a different way. And so we hope that we're going to have to evolve and move to vehicle to grid as well.
Great. Was that
Larry,
Richie or Steve with a question?
No, it was Richie. Larry, I just wanted to circle back to the conversations that you're having either with unions and around the workforce, and there's multiple stakeholders. We're hearing that in all of our conversations, that the utilities just across the board are expanding the stakeholders that they deal with on a daily basis, but I have not heard that exact one. I'm sure it happens elsewhere, but I hadn't heard that. It's been a lot of, DER and, power producers and, big solar farm developers, a lot of the ownership model discussions and, customer needs and engagement and education. And I'm sure, as you know, there are some ups and downs and some positive stories and some very strong lessons learned. What are you feeling, you know, just working with those kind of stakeholders or working with new stakeholders, if that's a thing for you guys at PG&E? How is that going? Are you finding success in that, or, you know, what are you learning from from that?
I'll just say, our conversation, I went and presented in front of the IBEW, and they had their international leader from the West Coast up as well. So this is all of the representation from the state of Oregon, Washington, together, and speaking to them on that behalf, and they were putting some sort of a resolution into the Oregon. We have a short session coming up in February, but they're very, very supportive. Obviously, they want to be involved in that work. And the challenge that we're putting to them now also is to say, okay, so how are we working with either high schools and trade associations / community colleges, however, you know, how do we build this workforce that knows how to deal with chargers and electric vehicles? You've got those that have been made for some time that deal with gas vehicles, but now you're needing to transition those folks. And in addition, I'll just say how to work with batteries and be it large scale or the wall battery in a residential home. You know, again, there's a workforce that's associated with that. And we're shorthanded on electricians and journeyman linemen already. So part of our workforce needs to convert in our society to take care of all this.
Larry, are you finding that those groups are coming to you for education, or is that a relationship that's kind of being built?
We're trying to build it. And let's face it that trades in general have been very short here the last, I'll say, 10 years or better. And I think Portland alone, we're short something like 35,000 workers to try and, you know, whether that's carpenters or that's steel workers or it's payback systems or sheet metal / electricians. Across the board in our trades, we are shorthanded. And we built a system in our high schools where if you don't go to college, you're a failure. And unfortunately, we haven't put in place basically an enticement to say, look, you could go be a journeyman lineman. I think you go just about anywhere in the nation now. And if you can't make over 100,000, or if you don't make over 100,000, it means you're not working any overtime. These are great jobs. Now, you have to like working with your hands. You have to like working outside. And how are we developing a workforce that's willing and able to do all those things? So we're starting in some of the high schools. We're trying to work that direction, and but we see a real need there.
That's great. Thank you.
I wanted to go back to some of your, you know, since we're discussing fleet electrification, how would Portland General define success specifically for this and more broadly for electrification efforts? You know, as part of the research, again, I did see that there were some goals set for, you know, 50,000 registered electric vehicles in Oregon by 2020, and, you know, that horizon is approaching. So if you could talk a little bit about goals for specific programs and more broadly what you're seeing, that would be great.
So that has been our target. I think we're at 26,000, something like that right now. And so there's a lot to come this next year to meet that 50,000. And then I believe it's the next tranche was 250,000 by 2025. And if you were going with the international standard, you need to be at something like, I think they were targeting 30% by 2030. But even if we were 10% by 2030, and We got 6 million cars in Oregon. You know, 600,000, is that enough? Is that realistic? I think we will push past, you know, that pretty quickly, you know, to move on. That's why I think the forecasts are pretty conservative on what we'll start to see in this transition. Other goals are going to be on the fleet side, like mass transit, buses. And I can't tell you off the top of my head what the actual goals are, but yes, we will have them. And something we have to figure out is utilities. How do we address pricing? I think there's a real effort here that people would like to see flat rate, flat fee, I should say, monthly fee on your electric vehicle. And when we think about electric vehicles, we're starting to think of them as flexible loads that are moving around our system. There are ways to interface with them associated with their charging. So again, if you can control their charging, when they're charging, when they're not charging, it's a demand response program. And what does that look like for customers and the benefit to us as well as the customer? So if you look at a lot of today's cars, they're set for, I'm going to charge when the time of use drops in the evening. So let's say 9 o'clock, the time of use for your utility drops for, you know, 2 cents. And so everybody sets their charger to start at 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Well, is that a good practice? Not when you have 6 cars tied to one transformer and you overload it.
Right. That's really interesting that you brought that up. I was at a conference just a couple of weeks ago when there was someone from SMUD who actually shared this example. It was on a Sunday when customers were not governed by the rates for EV charging, but 3 homes out of 16 that were served by this transformer in SMUD territory all charged at this time. I guess they came back from Tahoe or something. All of them charged at this time, and there was an overload situation happening. So, that's interesting. You know, if you could talk about some, and Richie, please let me know. I think this is an important sort of this load balancing and dispatchable load and control charging or managed charging. You know, how are rates being configured and what efforts are being undertaken by Portland General to, you know, I've heard this being said that we can build good behavior from the beginning with well-designed rates and configuring programs in a way that, you know, utilities aren't left with a situation to correct or teach, like how we have to teach energy efficiency. You know, if you start the right way, then you set up a system where, you know, you're not trying to correct for any embedded undesired customer behaviors with respect to consumption. So anything you can say about, you know, program configuration or rates that are designed to intercept these trends right at inception?
So we're investigating that, and we don't have anything yet in hand.
Okay.
But I would much rather get ahead of it now, when maybe you're only dealing with 50,000 vehicles, than having to deal with 500,000 vehicles.
Right.
So the sooner we get to it, you're absolutely right. We need to do it sooner than later. We seem to have 3 ways to communicate with cars. One would be through the charger itself.
Mm-hmm.
One would be device that you put in the car that you can communicate, and the other is to go through the OEM and communicate with the car directly. And the reason why I say that is, as we, your scenario of the charging and making sure that you don't overload the transformer, we want to sign customers up into a program where we see that vehicle, we see how it's charging in relation to its neighbors, et cetera, and then in essence, we incent them to work with us to behave better than the scenario you gave where they overload the transformer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I get to, could we get to a flat rate if they're willing to participate with us in this control ability? And we set some sort of minimums to say that your car will always be charged to this level. And then we can hold it off. And eventually, you don't really care that your car didn't start charging at 9 o'clock versus 10 o'clock versus 11 o'clock. You just care that at 6 o'clock the next morning, it's charged 100% and ready to go.
Right.
So we do want to set up an incentive that if you participate with us and allow us to do that management of your charging and do a flat rate, and then we'll take care of the back office with the other chargers that you go to. And if you ever are called upon for a demand response, that there's some credit for you as well that you can utilize as your home bill or you're charging your vehicle, however you'd like to do that. So we're exploring those, and I know our commission wants us to explore those as they received our transportation electrification document. They're asking some of those same questions. And so I think they're proactive with us. And as you're hearing from our governor, she's wanting to push for transportation electrification as well.
Great. I see that we are at 35 minutes past. Richie, do you think this is a good pivot point for grid resilience and more operations-focused discussion?
Yeah, I think we've kind of hit a lot of it. We haven't really focused in on you know, we started with the DERs and kind of, you know, just the resiliency and the reasons that resiliency is so important in the Northwest. It's different than in other places. I thought that was really interesting. And it's the resource adequacy. It's not something we've necessarily heard in most other places. And you mentioned storage and there's other ways to kind of build resiliency. We could certainly get back into that. I don't know if they're, you know, what we've heard is some utilities have very specific projects that they've been leaning on, or AEP has very specific demos that they are using to kind of tell the story of how they're advancing technology. So I don't, is there maybe one or two specific kind of technology activities that you're doing that you might want to point us to?
Sure. One would be our test beds, where we've selected three substations and the feeders associated with those substations in three different communities, Hillsboro, Milwaukee, and Northwest Portland. And we did that because the customer types and trying to think about equity with customers to be able to participate in these programs. And so there's 22,000 customers. It was an opt-out program, so they're all participating unless they do opt out. And it starts out, and what we've had is a lot of the education went out first, notifying them, getting them on for either text or emails. We notify them that we're triggering an event. They then can participate with their thermostat or other devices. And so it starts that in phase one, and we've done that now since September. Phase two, which comes up this next year, 2020, is we start controlling thermostats, hot water tanks, you know, getting into the EV space and the inverters for the photovoltaics. And so that becomes our demonstration areas. And so we're doing that now, and those what I would call our specific project areas. I think there's one other area that I would call out that we all utilities are working with, and that is it isn't this area of demand response and controllability, flexibility of loads. And so this last year, concerted effort trying to acquire more, it came out of our IRP where the Oregon Commission had asked us to get to 77 megawatts of by the end of next year. We're currently at 60 megawatts, and we can call upon different types. It comes in different flavors, commercial, residential, et cetera. But this past year, you know, we were demonstrating that and calling upon it, and you could see in your PI data, which is out of your EMS systems, the 50 megawatt dip, you know, during the high temperature periods. And I guess why I share that with you is to say, you know, we as utilities are moving from what was energy efficiency and a capacity play to dynamic devices on the system that we can control and impact energy usage on the system. And that means you're not just involving your sales force that you used to have. That means you're involving your operating personnel and your dispatchers and your power operations center that's doing marketing, et cetera, for energy. And that's a big transition that we're all going through. And those are big changes for entities that, you know, the sales force never talked to the operating folks. And so I share that with you just to say that's another piece that we're learning here is that these work groups are really starting to have to cross over.
Larry, it's a lot. We're hearing a lot of that. And not only have to, but it's making things a lot more efficient. And there's so many things that can be learned from different internal audiences as well. So you have so many different pieces that report back to you, it looks like, within, you know, the smart integration. And it sounds like you have engineers and a lot. I don't know exactly the structure within Portland General, but how are you seeing some of that interaction, the collaboration internally, you know, with engineers and IT and operations and sales? Is that changed over the last 5 years or even less?
I'll say the last year. yes. And you're right. I do have a new role, again, where I was transmission distribution before, grid architecture, integration system operations now with the engineers as well.
That's on purpose.
And we had a meeting just to reference as we were reviewing the demand response program. That was Tuesday morning. And in the room, we had our marketing group, the power ops. We had our demand response folks. We had our products folks. We had our IT folks. And we had our engineering folks that support the dispatch center. And they're all debating pros and cons. They've been doing a review of the gaps and what they see, who's controlling it, who's running the program, who's pricing it, the value of it. It was fun to see. I guess I'll just say that it tells you that we've come a long ways in this idea that those used to be just pilots. That was those guys over in the corner that are doing that, and now it's becoming part of our day-to-day lives.
That's great. I only have one more question, and we can circle back around on anything we missed, but it's the workforce development at work. I know that you're working with local and regional stakeholders on that, but that's really, you know, it's something that you guys have noted as something that needs your attention. What if there are that's you kind of giving education out. When you're looking for, hey, we need help here, and it's can you mention the workforce? But if you had a message out, and in this report, or we've kind of asked this question of, you know, what do you need? If there was one or two things from industry, from stakeholders, like what is the missing piece, at least in some of the challenges that you're facing? Whether it be from a technology standpoint or from just an operation standpoint, when you think, or what, you know, not what keeps you up at night, but, you know, what are you really seeing from, you know, I wish we knew this, or I wish we could do this now, and that's what we're aiming at. Does something stick out?
Well, so touch on just the workforce first would be, I mentioned we need the trades, but, you know, we also need the engineers. And we're going to need more of them. Our industry hasn't been sexy until recently with renewables, et cetera. It seems like we're attracting more and more folks. But that would be that's kind of the first ask. The second ask is we've got to get a lot better about the digital twin of our system. If that makes sense.
I mean, I've been to NYPA and seen some of the work they're doing on digital and virtual power plants. Do you mean that kind of, is it a testing thing, or is it a security?
Well, it's actually between, because security comes along with it, but it gets to we need sensors, controls, et cetera, data communications mechanisms, the communication links themselves. So it's having that, again, some people question whether we're selling electrons or digits, but we need that side of our business that is a digital twin to the electrical world, that gives us the analytics, that gives us the sense, that gives us the visibility, that gives us the capability to operate. Utilities are in a unique space to see what's happening at the generation side, as well as the load side, and balance this picture. And we feel like we have that unique opportunity, but we absolutely need a workforce that can do that. And as I mentioned, we need this digital twin that can really represent it and help us operate it.
Yeah. That's awesome. I hear that, and we're, you know, Gomathy and Steve and I, we're in this industry all the time. But, you know, your customers expect all of that data. You should have it, right? Like telecommunications has it. Like, that should be there. And I think that there's sometimes a gap, and maybe it's different in different regions, but the understanding of really what are the capabilities, there's many hurdles that have to get over to get to that place, even though some of the technology might be there. It's not always easy just to get to it.
I had a couple of more questions, Richie, as you undertake all of these efforts, making the grid more resilient, electrifying transportation, integrating renewables as adoption, customer adoption of these increases. What have you learned about your customers or your team, the market, any other market actors? So, you know, one example of this was, you know, in the EV case with the linemen and the electricians, you know, needing to facilitate that connection, or any of your technology partners, apart from that one instance, that was great, thank you. Anything that surprised you? And I'll add a sort of a corollary question to this. You know, in the context of other utilities that might be embarking on this path or coming behind Portland General, that's, you know, sort of an early adopter, an innovator in several of these areas, what should they know or do before they engage in projects like this?
Ooh, those are loaded questions.
We're interested in your answers.
Well, let me start. One would be a little bit of a surprise that this earlier this year when we were thinking about our customers and knowing our customers, and we have the leading green tariff participants in the nation, meaning that our customers are paying for RECs basically to make sure that they're offsetting. Again, on average, we're about 26-27% of our customers pay for that. And if you're in the city of Portland, it's like 35%. So the message that rang loud and clear for us is that our customers are really dedicated to decarbonization. And that's also 2 years ago when I think we got slapped alongside the head that you're not going to be building another gas plant anytime soon. And I know Puget Sound Energy had the same issue. And again, our customers saying, you know, wait a minute, before you think about any further carbon emitting devices, you got to make sure and prove to us that you're doing everything you can to decarbonize. So that was a surprise to us to kind of learn that our customers, and so whether it's industries or residential, commercial, they all want to participate. They all want to be involved. Mm-hmm. And so as we think about these programs of the future, whether it's their transportation or demand response, I think you need to start to think about gamification. What encourages them? What would that digital interface look like for them as a customer experience that helps them to participate and be a part of the solution?
Very interesting.
So I'll say that was the real surprise that came about, that people really care. People want to see change happen here.
That's great, and that is quite a compelling statistic. Over one third in a major metropolitan area, and over a quarter of all customers paying a premium for green. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see.
The other question, just to jog your memory, was, you know, three most or however many, two, one most important thing that other utilities should know.
Well number one is, are you taking care of the basic business? So as we look at our friends to the south in California, and Pacific Gas and Electric being that one, and the struggles they're going through, I mean, the black swan event can happen, but if you're not taking care of your basics, you'll be out of the business, and it won't matter how much technology you put into the system. If you can't keep the lights on, you're going to be out of business. So number two is taking care of your customers and really trying to work to think about, as you're developing these products, what is it that your customers really want? So here in the Northwest and Portland, we don't have a lot of solar. We have a little bit, but nothing like SMUD, nothing like, Southern Cal Edison or the Southwest. But we do have customers that really want to go into transportation. So to know what your situation is and how that could potentially impact customers as well as the grid. And then number three is, none of us want to be on the bleeding edge of all the new technology and be the first, but you really need to think about who your partners are. We've joined a number of what I'll call is the incubators, and it's not so much that, I mean, in the past, you can look at National Grid Partners, or you can look at AEP or Ameren or Duke. They've joined many of those so they can make investments in those companies and then have those companies, do work in their facilities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But most utilities and their regulatory models won't allow them to invest in those companies the same. But what you can learn there is what's possible, what are new ideas, what are the new companies that are coming out. And so I would encourage people to think about the innovation within their company and how do you encourage your personnel to step up their game and think about what could be new and different.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah. That's great. You know, I think as you were talking about gamification, you know, this was a question. It was like, what are the different technology partners who can help enable those strategies to engage customers? But perhaps that's grist for another conversation. Yes, yes, absolutely. It's close to three. Any other closing thoughts, Richie, that we want to elicit?
No, this has been extremely valuable and useful. I would pose that question to Larry if there's anything else, you know, closing remarks or any thoughts that you wanted to get out there that you didn't.
No, I think I've exhausted you guys enough.
this is great. This is great, and I think like all good research, it will give rise to more interesting questions and more conversations. So yeah, this is excellent. Thank you so much.
That's great. Well, good talking with you all, and we'll run into Steve.
We'll be
somewhere along the line.
Yeah, well, keep me in mind. I'll come up to Portland just if you can give me a good reason.
Okay, we'll be thinking about it.
All right,
thanks, guys.
Have a great
day.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you.